Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for U.S. Practitioners call on Wednesday, 11th of April, 2018. On the call, we currently have Gerald Levine, Petter Rinforth, Jason Schaefer, Kathy Kleiman, Colin Curie, and Jay Chapman. From staff, we have Julie Headland, myself, Michelle DeSnyder. As a reminder, please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. I'll turn the meeting over to Jason Schaefer.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Thank you, everyone. We have a nice, intimate group today. Hopefully more will be joining us. I think it makes sense to get started, and then hopefully others will come on board as we proceed. By way of quick background, you're probably all aware, but I'll remind everyone that when we last met as a subgroup, full subgroup, we agreed that we'd form a small group of volunteers to take back the comments that we received in ICANN 61 in Puerto Rico and also on subsequent calls. The goal was to take the original document that we had created as a sub-team, edit, make it more manageable for the users, and more streamlined. So George, myself, Petter, and Scott Austin worked on this for about a week. We made some edits. Greg Chatton chimed in as well. And we were able to come to a consensus as a volunteer group of a document that takes a little bit of a different format than we had that you might have originally seen. It follows, at least at its core, a more of a survey type of document with multiple choice answers for most questions. And then where we thought it would be important, particularly for certain questions on substantive issues, we added a required explanation text box to explain or propose what your, explain your position. We culled the questions down quite a bit, and I think that I'm very pleased with the results. So hopefully, you guys also appreciate the result that we have now. So, Julie, do you want to, can you put that on screen? Okay. Thank you. So, in case you, hopefully everyone's had a bit of a chance to, review this. It's not a terribly long document, but on page one, as you can see, we started with the multiple choice questions. Goal here was to, one, encourage participation and not overwhelm the questionnaire. And also, try to get as good of data and feedback as we possibly could, understanding that we do have, constraints, not only technical but, we also have user fatigue, right? How many people really want to spend an hour going through this document? So with that, I open it up to everyone for your comments, thoughts, considerations on what we've done.
And Jason, this is Julie from staff. I can help manage hands up from people. I don't see any hands right at the moment.
Okay. So we have page one, four questions there, pretty self-explanatory.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, Jason. There is now a hand up. As soon as I said that, wouldn't you know it? Colin has his hand up.
Okay, hi there, Colin. This is Colin. Hi, this is Colin Curry for the record. I really like what you guys did. I think it came together really nicely. The one comment that I would offer from this page is I think that the 7-option Likert scale in response to question 3 could maybe be pared down to have fewer options. It just seems maybe a bit excessive to have so many degrees of positivity and negativity. Maybe 5 would be a slightly a better option.
Sure. Thank you, Colin. That does make sense. I think we can take note of that. I don't know if it would, paring it down to five wouldn't necessarily change the outcome. Yes, some granular detail might be important. I don't know who on the team added those. You know, the more the greater detail there. I don't remember. Petro, do you remember if anyone who pushed for that?
No, I didn't. I think it could be a good idea. Just wanted to clarify before we proceed. If you say five, shall we? Do you mean? Well, we have positive, neutral, negative. I presume you think of something. It could be three of them, but if we add two extra to make it five, shall we say, is it somewhat or very positive or very negative? What did you have in mind there?
When I was looking at it, I was originally thinking that three might be sufficient, but in the interest of having more granularity, perhaps we could just leave off either extremity and just have positive, somewhat positive, neutral, somewhat negative, and negative, and maybe leave off the extremes. But I also think that perhaps, I'm not sure who had put in these options, but it might be worth considering even just having the three options. It would give you less granularity, but it might provoke, a more realistic response. I'm not sure. We don't want people to have choice paralysis.
So this is true. This is George. So originally, I had put in for these, I had put positive, strongly positive, negative, strongly negative. There were only four choices. And then it got morphed somehow into this big thing, which I agree with Colin is too much.
And this is Kathy. I support going back to George's original four, because that's how the document went through for a while. It seems to have come in at the end. Thanks.
So this is Colin again for the record. What's really interesting is that we're deciding whether or not to give people kind of a middle road coasting option, and essentially like a no answer option. So that would be the big difference between having an even number or an odd number.
Yeah, better here. I think it's a good idea if we could limit it to three or four, and as you said, then have the possibility to make a comment if the respondent would like to do so. And then everybody is free to add extremely or something
right
in the comments.
Yeah, Jason here. I think, George, what were your original points?
It was positive, strong. It was like strong, positive, strongly positive, negative, strongly negative.
Okay. I agree. We should pare it down. I think it's coming down to: do we go with George's original, or do we have a neutral middle of the road approach in there? But I think we can fairly all agree that we should pare it down. Any thoughts on just going reverting back to George's original versus adding in neutral? Anybody in favor of just going back to George's original? Anyone against?
I think that there might be some value to have a middle-of-the-road option just to give people a tick box in case they don't feel so qualitative or in case they don't have such strong feelings against it.
Okay. So we could do five choices and just add neutral and keep it standard, as Julie just wrote on the chat. So we would have A, B, C, D, E, which would match everything else. And unless there's objection to adding neutral, how about we come to consensus, make an agreement? Anybody against doing that?
I see Kathy has her hand up.
Kathy?
The joy. I thought I took it down. I'm in favor of the five with the neutral. That sounds great. And I will try to remember how to take my hand down. Thanks.
And it would be great if I could figure out how to see you with your hand up. But in any event, yes. Anybody object to proceeding as we've just articulated?
Nope.
No objections? Okay. Great. So, staff, if you could just note that, we'll go with the ABCDE choice and revert to George's original plus neutral. Thank you. Okay. If there are no further points or questions on questions 1 through 4, if Julie could move to the next page. Thank you. We may be running into the same thing on question 7 here. Just draw that to your attention. Anybody have take a few seconds to review these questions? Any questions, thoughts on these next 5?
The number 7, I would go to the 5 choices as we just discussed on the other one.
Okay. Looks like Colin supports as well. Anybody against reverting to 5 on for question 7? And no objection?
No, Peter here. I don't remember if you have it also for other upcoming questions, but I think it's a good idea to have it generally cut down to these 5. Also, so that those that go through the questions can recognize the type of questions, and it will also give us, I think, a more easy to read result.
Sure, Peter, I second that. Make it consistent and manageable. Okay, any other thoughts on the questions and how we modified them? Okay, no further questions on questions 5 through 10. Julie, would you please move to the next page? Okay, this is getting into the substantive issues. This section, as you will see as we go through it, ask you to pay a little bit more close attention to the nature of the questions. But any thoughts on questions 1 through 5? One of the things we did here that diverges from the original document was just a bit of a reordering as well. Okay, no questions on page 3. Move on, please, to page 4. So questions 6 through 9 would conclude the substances section. And here I'll draw your attention to, for example, in question 8, it shows a text box and requirement to explain whether you're advocating for a change and to explain the basis for your position. Okay, any questions or thoughts on these questions?
This is Colin Curry for the record. Looking at the text box, it was added in question 8. I wonder if it wouldn't be better to leave that off and to have this be perhaps referenced in the question in the input box for comments towards the end of the document, rather than having specific lines for comments after each question, because I noticed that this is a trend that continues on the next page. Perhaps there would be it would be better to just have something at the end that says, in the preceding question, specifically question 8 or something like that, do you have any comments? Just because by providing this justification for a position, then it might influence people's response to the question.
Thanks, Colin. I understand your concern. The just so you understand, the rationale for doing this is, one of the concerns we had was if you just do A, B, C, D, let's just take this question as an example. If you look at the question itself, it's the type of question that just saying I think it's adequate doesn't really invite further comment. And when we're getting to the heart of a particular matter, the idea was that it would at least allow on both sides of the issue, whether you are for or against or neutral, at least neutral probably wouldn't say anything. But if you're for or against changing the standard, it would make sense to require you to explain that. if we just have people just ticking box B, for example, it should be lowered. Well, okay, it's interesting data to have, but we'll have nothing to really go from there. So we thought it would make sense to at least have some explanation. If you don't do it, you don't do it. If we leave it as a catch-all at the end, as we do in every section anyway, people may or may not respond. So we were trying to make sure we had enough usable data and something that was useful rather than just having 50 answers B and 20 answers C. Yeah, who's this?
This is George.
Okay.
And Petra also has his hand up.
Should I go ahead?
Go ahead, George.
Yeah. So, Jason, I tend to agree. I think that the thing to keep in – I mean, I think it's a good comment from Colin. But I want to say that I agree that we need to find that drill down on this to figure out whether it ought to be lower or higher. And it, since this is going to be turned into as I understand, and maybe this is still the plan, to a SurveyMonkey-type survey – SurveyMonkey lets you have these comment boxes like right next to it, and so when I've done these SurveyMonkey, taken them for a variety of things, and we have them all the time in our organization, they certain questions where we need to drill down a little bit more, we end up having these comment boxes. They appear right there so that people can do it, because what we found is that when folks are given the catch-all at the end of it, they tend to just, like, you know, maybe they're commenting on one or two things, and then they'll not comment on everything. There are a handful that will comment everything, but we never get as many comments as when we have the comment box right next to the question. That's just, you know,
sure. I'm in agreement with you, just so you know, George. I agree we should have the comment box. I'm in agreement with you. Petter?
Yes, I agree with that. We should have the possibility for certain of the comments to certain of the questions to comment directly, and also for everybody, have in mind that when we started to look at these questions, more or less all of them were like comments. I mean, there was, I think we had one or two that was yes or no, but the rest of them were what is your opinion about, etc., etc. So this means that we have also limited the number of sub-questions to make it more practical, and that's why it's good to have the opportunity to make some specific comments on certain of the directly connected to certain of the questions where we have just a yes or no. But I presume that we also have at the end of the document the possibility to make some final comments or general comments. But as said, it's good to have them directly with these yes or no questions so that we also can connect them.
Okay, thank you, Petra. I see Kathy has her hand up.
Oh, you can see. Good. Good.
Well,
good.
No, I've been told in the chat room. Sorry, I was not clear.
Someday we'll learn these tools, huh? Great. So just to amplify Colin's point to make sure that both sides are heard on this, the catch-all falls immediately afterwards, right? So number 8 is where we're asking for more data. A comment, and number 9 is saying, please provide any comments you wish, an explanation. So my guess is if anybody has anything burning on number 8, they'll put it in number 9 because they hit it right next. One of the things I really liked, and George, I can't find the original version of your piece, was just that streamlining, that invitation to kind of do fast click-throughs and not be asked for a lot of data until you kind of get to the end of the section. So, you know, I think there is, you know, reason to go back to that more streamlined. I can see why it might be a place to stop. But as we go through the document, the more we ask people to stop, the more I wonder if they're going to keep going to the end. So I really like the original format, if I remember correctly, which was question, 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 you know, then a comment area if people wanted to expand, then a new segment and questions in a comment area. That seemed to me to be kind of ideal. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Julie, could you just do a quick scroll back to from one and then go from one to four? I just wanted to see if everybody could see. I don't have the document outside of the chat, but I think we only have a handful of areas. Right, so we have question four, right? Okay, next. Five, okay, next. Okay, so then it would be, and then eight in the next section. So it's only three questions that we've done this. So it's not necessarily, obtrusive and something that would slow down a party, but so it looks like we have a little bit of a debate going here. Some people in favor of more specificity. Everybody's in favor of having more specificity. The question really is, it seems, is would you be better apt to have it in a handful of questions to key in on those questions as opposed to just having a catch-all? Both important points. I would say that personally, I just think that the catch-all is something that tends to be ignored by most, especially if the catch-all is voluntary. So if we do want to have more specificity, it may make some sense to do so. Julie has your hand up. Oh, Julie, okay, go ahead.
Which you wouldn't be able to see, so there's no point in putting it up. This is Julie from staff. I would like to get back to the point that George made, that we can do for SurveyMonkey, which might answer both issues, and that is that in the case of a survey that's done and used a lot and allows it to be more streamlined, X to B, yes, it should be lowered, then the text box would immediately follow that answer. It wouldn't come below. It would be sort of like next to it. And same with C. So you wouldn't really actually be going to a text box that's below 8. It would actually be part of that answer. And, in fact, we even have the option of making it required that someone enter in. You know, yes, it should be lowered. Please explain. Text box, and they have to enter something. You know, yes, it should be higher. Please explain, and have the text box. So I don't know if that helps make it a little more streamlined, but still be able to gather the information.
That's helpful, Julie. Thank you. Okay, we have a couple comments. Kathy's suggesting we scroll through the rest of the questions, and Colin making a note that we do lack a neutral opinion in the procedural substantive question section. So we can certainly keep moving and then revert back. Colin, do you want to speak more to your point, or should we go on? Okay. Can we move to the next page, Julie? Oh, Colin. Okay. Colin's audio is out, it looks like, so she said to move on. Okay. Page five. Any thoughts, concerns, comments on page five? Okay. Julie, can we move on? And page six, I believe, is the final page, correct? So, and now we have the final page. Any thoughts, questions, concerns regarding the last set of questions? Okay, well, we've at least been able to get through the entire document, so that's an accomplishment. Any thoughts?
Kathy has her hand up. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Great. And I'll just repeat, I'm participating as a member of the subteam, not as a co-chair in this case. But wanted to say that for these last questions, we're seeing a lot of prompts and comments. And it just seems to break with the flow of the document as we saw it from George, if I remember correctly. The other thing is I don't understand the question, have you chosen not to file a URS in a particular matter? That seems to me to be pretty broad. I'd love to understand better what that means. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. George, was this yours, or I think this might have been a Scott question. Do you recall?
It may be one of these questions that morphed, but the idea was that that there are, you know, people, practitioners are get matters, a domain name matter, and let's say they'll have a client come to them and say, you know, this is matter, and they will consider whether or not they're going to do a UDRP or they're going to do a URS or proceed in some other manner, a demand letter or something. So there have been instances that somebody, you know, a client might have said, well, look, how about doing a URS? And the practitioner may have said to the client, no, I don't think you should do this here because, you know, whatever reasons. And so this question is meant to see, has there been situations where you contemplated filing a URS and just decided not to do it for the matter, and then, you know, to get some information as to why.
Okay, thank you, George. Kathy, does that help you?
Would it make more sense to say something like, and I know this isn't a yes or no question, but, you know, when do you decide to use the URS versus when do you decide to use other mechanisms? Please elaborate. Because that might get more to the heart of what George was saying. Have you chosen not to file a URS in a particular matter? Probably everyone's going to say yes, but I'm not sure that answer is going to help us get to the kind of depth that he's talking about. Thanks.
It will help us in the sense that if you go the other route on there, what would be interesting is like if people, practitioners are just saying, all of them are saying, yes, there's been matters where we haven't. Then that's where you need to have that comment field or something, why. And then you can, like, code it. You can code the responses that come in. You know, people say, I didn't want to file it because I couldn't get a transfer of the name. Or I didn't file it because I didn't think I could prove my case in 500 words, you know, or something like that. And then we can code that and see what that is. But in the first instance, it'd be good to know that, if you have 100 practitioners and 98 of them said, yeah, I didn't use it, then that's a high number of people who don't use it, and we'd want to know, why is it that you're not using it?
Wait a second, George, but that's not the question. This is Kathy. It's not, are you not using the URS? It's, did you choose a better mechanism in another case? Which
that's the same thing as saying I didn't use it. Because basically, because that's saying I had a matter, I thought about it, and decided not to do that. And so to me, it's like you just chose not to use this RPM. So in that particular matter. So can you say something to help us understand why? You know, maybe it's just not appropriate. Maybe they'll just say not appropriate for the matter, which, you know, should tell us then that might go to a later question where we ask, you know, is the URS being used for the type of cases intended, these clearly abusive type of registrations? That would be an interesting piece of data to have and to have this information. Because if people don't use it when they're faced with a matter, that's, to me, an important consideration. I don't know. Maybe others have other thoughts.
Okay. So Kathy and George, Colin's hand is up. So I'm looking at the chat. It looks like Colin may have some other points to make. Do you have a point on this debate? Looks like the hand is down now.
Jason,
okay.
Kathy, I put some language into the chat. And maybe this is not a place for yes and no questions. Maybe this is, you know, we're coming to the end of the survey. Hopefully people have a little bit of energy. But maybe this is a place to say, when do you decide to use the URS and when do you use UDRP and other mechanisms? And that way, you know, we've kind of fleshed it out and given them the opportunity to respond. Thanks.
Okay, Kat. So I see in the chat you wrote, when do you decide to use the URS? When do you decide to use UDRP and other mechanisms? as opposed to a yes, no, not applicable question format. Perhaps there's a way we could satisfy both sides. I think that George, if we took Kathy's suggested language and reworked it, obviously the without violating confidentiality or privilege and work product would of course the qualifier would be important. Does that seem to make satisfy the issue?
Yeah, what I was about to suggest is I was going to say keep the question, change the comment box. Like you're saying, answer if your answer is yes, blah blah blah. Instead of saying specify the alternative action, explain why you chose not to use the URF.
Okay, Kathy.
Keep my question, the version that I put into the chat.
I think what George was saying is. Go ahead. George, sorry.
No, you can say it. All I was saying, Kathy, is keep the question, but then in the comment where it says that the answer is yes, they've chosen not to file, to explain why they didn't, use the URS.
I just don't see why we're asking a question that has 100% yes answer already. Let's just go to the next step and delve deeper, because there are certain things that are appropriate for the URS, certain things not appropriate for the URS. As an attorney, as a practitioner, they're going to have to make that decision up front. That doesn't tell us anything, and I don't think, about the URS or the UDRP being fit for purpose. So I would just, before we get to that ambiguity and introduce it, I'd just kind of go to the next level, kind of the real question that I think you're asking. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Jason, I second Kathy's point on that one. I mean, it does make sense. We're going to have most likely 100% yes vote for practitioners. There's most likely going to be 100% of them saying, at some point in time, I chose not to file a URS matter.
Right, but then aren't you going to get then the my concern about the question as framed, right? The way this question is like, why would you use this and not that one? I don't think a lot of people are going to want to go into explaining why they use a URS or UDRP over a URS or vice versa. I certainly would be reluctant to answer it that way. I would be much more to say a very specific reason why I didn't use in our matter the URS, as opposed to doing sort of a general kind of explanation between URS and UDRP.
Okay, I understand where George is coming from as well. I think this question actually exemplifies the issue that we're faced with on the broader document and the difficult task we all face here. And the question is it's about good data versus, usable data versus not. And I think, if we know going ahead that the response rate is going to be, 70, if we have a universe of 75, we're going to have 75 yes answers for this question, we'll just have to know that data it is what it is. We know going in that the question is going to skew the results because we already know the answer. On the other hand, George does have a point that I respect, obviously, as practitioners. None of us necessarily are going to want to reveal our strategies and why we do one thing over another, and obviously it certainly varies between client to client. So interesting that we're stuck on this point, but it's worth the debate.
Petra has his hand up.
No, I was thinking one possibility could be to rephrase it to, if you choose not to file a URS in a particular matter, what was the reason? And then if it's correct to do so, but I presume that we have some numbers of from our comments and from the work so far, the quite common reasons why people are not using the URS. compared to UDRP or other ways to solve the dispute. So I don't know if that could be a good way to have a short list of those the most common reasons that you could click on, all the reasons that suits your case, and then also ended up with an open line for other reasons.
Okay. It looks like Kathy in the chat room. It looks like Colin noted that there may have been an original question more along the lines of what Petter just suggested. I tend to agree with Petter's suggested way through. It looks like Kathy does as well. So Petter, you would explain that you just say if you chose, what was that language again? If you chose not to file a URS.
Yeah, as if you chose not to file a URS in a particular matter or case, what was the reason? Something like that,
right.
And then have some. I think we can, as I said, I think we can go back in the documents and comments we have and see. Maybe we could put it down to the most common five or six reasons, probably five, and then also have an open box where people can add another reason. I mean, one of the most common one is, of course, that there is no possibility to have the domain name transferred to the complainant. I mean, there's also the traditional cost reasons, time reasons, and of course you have to choose that you have to show that the counterpart has not just registered but also used the domain name and also the questions for your own use when it comes to the trademarks. And so I think we can rather easily find, as I said, five or six specific questions, reasons, and then also have an open line.
Okay, thank you, Petter. George, does that satisfy your concerns and find a pathway through for us, or do you still have some objection or concern?
So, if I understand it, is the question, are we keeping the question and then it's the comment box that's having Petter's statement, which just says, if you chose not to file, please explain? Is that what we're saying? Because I'm fine with that.
I believe that is what we're saying. The question would remain, and then we would just change the answer section.
And I'm absolutely fine with that. I'm not wedded to that comment box the way it was written.
Okay.
So I support that.
Okay, thank you. So it's, anybody have any further thought on that? Welcome, Scott. It looks like we reached consensus on retaining in section, last section, question one, retaining the question and then slightly modifying the answer section to reflect Petter's comments. Okay. That looks like it brings us to the end of the document. So I think, again, congratulations to everyone. I think we only have maybe two issues that would be need to make minor adjustments, but it looks like we have a solid document. So
I'm sorry to be late, but could you share with me what the two issues are? Scott,
sure. Thank you, Scott. So the one issue you may have just heard was the question on question one, other, how to handle, have you chosen not to file a URS in a particular matter? And then I believe if we scroll, Scott, do you have access to the chat room?
I do.
Or I maybe just, Julie, could you?
I can only get. I can only see 8, and then 1 and 2.
Julie, can you maybe, or staff, could you just recall the notes? There was maybe 1 or 2 changes that we were.
Yeah, this is Julie Hedlund for staff. So here were the changes that staff captured, and actually this is helpful in case I've missed something. So as a universal change, where there were 7 options from, you know, strongly positive, somewhat positive, et cetera, we've agreed to go to a 5-choice Likert scale, and so we'll make that change universally, and that allows for a neutral option as well. On
the 5 would be strongly agree, neutral, and then disagree.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the Likert scale, actually.
Okay.
Pretty standard. And then there was a question, question 8, and let me get to that. It was in the based on your experience with URS, should the standard for the burden of proof be modified? And the thought was to include a comment box, but to in order to streamline it so it's not you're going to sort of hold up the timing in the survey. George had noted that in SurveyMonkey you can put the comment box actually associated with that item. So if you say B, yes, it should be lowered, please explain, and then there'll be a comment box immediately there. And or C, yes, it should be made higher, please explain, and there'll be a comment box there. So that was in lieu of having the comment fall after you'd gone through the different options.
Okay, I appreciate it. I'm not sure anybody is really going to move that to beyond a reasonable doubt, but I guess it's worth having it since we've offered lower.
And then the final item was question 1 under the other section, and the decision was, well, I think Jason, you just explained that one. So I think that was covered, right?
Yes.
It was under other. Yeah, I heard that. If that was just the comment from Cutter.
That was all we've captured. I've captured. Right.
Yes, that's right.
So can you guys hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you, Colin.
Okay, great. Sorry. This is Colin for the record. I think that we might want to consider adding a neutral option to the Likert type responses further down in the questionnaire. I do, not only from a parallelism point of view where we start out with 5 options and then we move to 4, but it could be useful to allow people to indicate if they have no opinion rather than making them choose between yes or no. For example, if the burden of proof, I see that we have this in some of them in the no opinion, but there are some in others, like question 1 on page 4 under practical issues. Do you believe the current mechanisms for providing use in the URS case are adequate? I wonder if it wouldn't be useful to have some sort of no opinion or moderate option there as well.
Okay, thank you, Colin. Any thoughts on Colin's point to have consistency throughout the document or any objection to specific questions having a more neutral no opinion option?
I think it's good to have all questions in as much as possible in some kind of similar way, and as we have no opinion in a lot of them, those that actually don't have any opinions, it's good to see that they have at least replied to the question as such, so
okay.
I have nothing against that.
Thank you, Petra. Looks like Kathy in chat agrees. Staff notes it. It looks like that makes sense. Why not? I don't have anybody objecting to it. So I guess we can accept Colin's thought, a valid point, and make that in the final doc. Any other final points as we are soon to wrap up anyway? Okay,
when
so
does this actually get the, when does this get distributed?
I'd be happy to do a briefing on that.
Yeah, Kathy, please. Yeah, please jump in and go ahead and explain where we are now.
Okay, great question. And now I am putting on my co-chair's hat because Phil and I talked about this. And so next week we'll be reconvening as a full working group, which we haven't done for a while. So the 4:18 meeting is a meeting at the regular time, and then the 4:25 meeting is our new Asia-friendly meeting. So that's 8 a.m. Eastern time, just to let everybody know what's coming up. And the idea was that all three sub-teams appear ready to come back to present. Everybody's wrapping up this week, so appears ready to come back. One of the things we don't know, and I wanted to raise it, and I apologize, it may take us a little overtime, is how we want to implement what we want to do next, now that we have the questions and, you know, assuming the working group agrees or has some, you know, modifications. What do we do next? You know, and let me propose, do we want to ask staff to go ahead and set up the SurveyMonkey? Do we want to email our list of practitioners? And by the way, I have really good news. I talked to Renee Fossen of the forum, and she's willing to help us get the email addresses, because that was one of the things we didn't know, get the email addresses and reach out to the practitioners, because the forum should have just about all of those addresses. Do we want to reconvene the sub-team to analyze the results? Not to make the policy recommendations, of course, but to put together, let's say we get 40 to 60 responses, to put them together in some kind of meaningful document or table. So different things about how we want to go forward in terms of going forward with the survey, collecting the data, and delivering it to the working group. Thanks.
Julie, go ahead.
So, yeah, just to the point about putting this into a survey, staff can certainly do that. We do have access to a license for SurveyMonkey, and it is already, fortunately, in a survey form, so that's not terribly difficult to do. I would just suggest, though, that, you know, we do, I think staff would rather wait until the full working group has also had a chance to review the questions in case there are any changes. It's a lot easier to take a final product and put it into SurveyMonkey than to have to go back and edit SurveyMonkey if you have to make changes.
Okay, thank you, Julie. Yes, I think a lot of this makes a lot of sense, Kathy, and I think I agree, and certainly Julie's point is well taken. It would be nice to be able to have understanding how this has proceeded to date and understanding the constraints that we're faced with as a wider group and a smaller sub-team. You know, I think it would make a lot of sense to work together to create some sort of, once we have the responses, to create some sort of usable review of the data. Scott, your hand is up. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Scott Austin for the record. I think it's extremely important that it does come back to us, or that we do participate in the analysis of the data, since we each, I think, had our own genesis of a question, or certainly participated in why some of the changes were made. But beyond that, I think one of the things we kicked around a little bit in the early stage was how this would be presented to the people who are going to be taking the, you know, survey, in terms of whether it will be anonymized, and maybe this has been discussed, please forgive me if I'm making you go back over it, but the question, I guess, is if staff would know the names of the actual people who are filling this out, so that we can authenticate and verify and make sure that there's no double counting, that there's not people who are pretending to be something that they're not, that kind of thing. But yet at the same time, keeping it anonymous so that we get honest opinions, results, et cetera, or people wouldn't be gaming it, et cetera, all of those kinds of things. I just wondered where we're at on that determination.
Okay, thanks, Scott. That's a good point. I don't think we have an answer on the whether, you know, staff, maybe you'll be able to comment on, you know, anonymizing the data or the responses. I'm assuming that certainly makes sense, and obviously a verification system is critical. Julie, do you have any insight into that at the moment, or do you need to do more research?
This is Julie from staff. I can help with that, but I see George has his hand up, and I know
okay.
he has knowledge about surveys as well, so maybe I'll defer to him.
Okay, George.
Hi. George Nacimanzi for the record. So I think that Kathy's comments are great. I agree that we should have, like, some sort of smaller group analyze the data because it'll become unwieldy otherwise. And in terms of, like, getting that anonymity, when they fill in, there are ways to do the SurveyMonkey where they can, you know, fill in, you know, a name or some identifier, or they can not fill in an identifier. I prefer that there be some to avoid fraud where you have somebody submitting multiple questionnaires. So some, you know, even if it's just on the level of the email address, and once you know you've gotten it from that email, then you at least block the further answers to the survey. But the survey responses, when it's aggregated, you can block that field out. You should be able to do that in SurveyMonkey, so that you get raw data, but you don't get, you know, who said what. It can be kept anonymous. The function is there. So the other point I was going to make on this is in terms of we're going to have these questions. They're going to go to the working group. And, Kathy, I'm just going to, you know, throw this out, and I don't know what you and Phil can do, but I've seen it on these other things where we have all these questions, and there's been a lot of time and a lot of people who contributed to getting this in this form, and it's great to have the whole working group look at it and ultimately move along, but I don't want to get us so bogged down with people in the minutia that we end up spending weeks trying to get a set of questions that are done. So is there a way that we can have it, people can give input, and then just say this is a these are the set of questions now based after these inputs, and, you know, take them or leave them. And let's have a vote and just move on.
George, this is Kathy responding. I wish. although he's no longer with us as a co-chair, I hear Jay Scott's voice saying something about not cutting off debate. He was always talking about that in both the co-chairs meeting and the main meeting. I think one thing we might do is get a hold of other people that we know in the working group and let them know how hard we've worked, and kind of, you know, let them know that this is the result of considerable discussion. Of course, there are many more questions that could be asked, but this is the streamlined approach. And talk about, you know, your philosophy, George, that we all adopted, which is to make this answer, you know, something people want to answer. And I think they really do, and it will give us a new amount of information. So doing some of that work up front, also after it's, you know, in the discussion, we may want to have, you know, perhaps, you know, a few people from the subteam could talk. I assume Jason will be presenting. That's a question, Jason, of course. And,
yeah.
You know, and then other people can talk about that this was, you know, really, really well discussed and kind of support what Jason is saying. But in terms of cutting off all debate, probably not, in part because some people in the subteam may want to edit something that comes in from the providers group or the documents group. I think we're presenting it to share it with them. Sorry for the long answer. I'll go back to my original answer. I wish. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I think, you know, this is Jason. Just speaking, you know, personally, and I think on behalf of everybody that's on this call and the volunteer groups, you did. You know, you hit the nail on the head. We spent a lot of time getting to this point, and it was considered and well-reasoned. And, of course, you know, we can't cut off debate, but to the extent that we could strongly indicate and suggest that this is, you know, this is it, and this is the solid document, obviously if there are gaping issues or missing points, of course, we certainly could consider them. but it would be a shame to get mired into a 2-week discussion on 2 separate calls to obliterate the document and move it to a new direction. But as you said, we can't cut off debate. But I'm also concerned about that, because it would be very inefficient if we and a shame if this work product wasn't able to stand on its own merit and be torn apart in the wider group. I'm assuming the other sub-teams feel the same about their work, and obviously we would want to have comment on their work, but let's face it, we delegated authority to the subgroup and then further authority to the volunteers in order to avoid that scenario. So I don't know how we get there, but I'm all for finding a way to allow for debate without getting us mired into a couple-week-long problem.
And Jason, George has his hand up. I don't know, George, if that's a new or an old hand.
No, that's an old hand. Let me take it down. Sorry.
And then when there's a moment, I have a question, a procedural question, Jason.
Okay. Looks like Kathy's coming. It makes a lot of sense. So I think we are all in agreement. Obviously, debate will continue, but let's do what we can to guard against complete wholesale changes without and weeks of being mired in debate. Julie?
Yeah, so my question is this. I've taken some notes and I will make the edits to the survey, and I was going to suggest that perhaps, since we don't have everybody, I don't think, in our sub-team, I know we're missing Greg at least, on this call, that I could send around the final edited version of the survey, both redlined and clean, with the note so that people understand the changes that we made, and then maybe do a last call just in case there's something that I may have missed, and then with the view to sending it to the full working group tomorrow.
Well, Kathy, how do you feel about, how would you suggest we proceed in light of Julie's thoughts and what were our concerns? What would be the in your mind as the co-chair, the best way to disseminate the information, but also, keep in mind some of the points we all share?
That's a good question. So, Julie, do we have a co-chair's call on Friday? We used to, just by way of background, we used to have these regularly with Phil and Jay Scott and myself and staff. We had it for a number of weeks sequentially.
Yeah, Kathy, we did suggest to you and Phil that we could certainly do that, and we just wondered whether or not it would be at the usual time or earlier. So we're prepared to have that call if you want it.
Terrific. Then what I think is probably going to happen is, and let me suggest that rather than circulating our stuff separately tomorrow, let's wait to the co-chair's call and figure out, A, whether all the sub-teams reported out this, today, whether everybody's wrapping up as scheduled and has material, and then maybe we can send it all out together, with a note about how hard all the sub-teams work, because they all have worked, and that may reduce the level of kind of debate and editing that goes on. Just a thought. Would anybody object if we waited till after the co-chair's call, which will probably be Friday morning?
Kathy, this is Scott. I just wasn't sure whether you meant wait to send it to us within our little group, the final version or the revised version.
Good question. No, finishing up the final version and then waiting before distributing it to the full working group, waiting until Friday morning for kind of an overall plan for the next few weeks of the working group to come out of the we really call it the leadership meeting because it's staff and co-chairs. Would that be okay? But moving forward, immediately on the final version from the sub-team.
Yeah. Okay, I understand. Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. As long as we get it as soon as possible, but it wouldn't be distributed until after you all have your meeting. That's what I'm hearing.
Right. That's exactly the proposal.
Okay, that makes sense to me. as a way forward. I guess one point to clarify, Julie, you would be sending the final edits to our volunteer group or the people on this call or the wider subteam?
This is Julie. I would send it to the notes and the revised survey with red line and clean to this full subteam, so the subteam practitioners list, given that there are few people who are on that subteam that are not on the call at the moment.
Okay. The only thought I have there is I think it would make sense that our smaller group just approved the changes, and then you send just a clean version to the wider subteam as opposed to this. It would be a two-step process, but what I'm saying is instead of having the wider subteam see a further red line, that might invite ask more questions than and provide more questions than answers. If we've approved the changes, send those out and send that out to the wider subteam as this is the document.
Sure, that's fine. So I'll send it to the people that are on this call. So that's George, Gerald, Jason, Jay, Kathy, Patrick, Scott, and I apologize again. There were two dial-in people, or did they join? Is there anybody I missed?
Colin.
You met Colin.
Oh, yeah, Colin's not showing up for me anymore. Maybe she dropped.
Yeah, she said she had to go. It looks like on the chat she had to drop out.
All right. Very good. That's what I'll do then. I'll send it to you all first and give you, a day to look at it before going to the full subteam?
Perfect.
That's perfect. Well, I think the next step, that would be. And then, Kathy, you said you would take that and go to the Friday call and then decide how to deal with it, right?
Right, and I'll send a note sometime on Friday, just by way of background to the subteam to let everybody know what's happening next after that leadership call.
Okay.
I also wanted to add one more thing, if I might, that going forward, we don't know, and this is more by way of the big picture. Going forward, we don't know how and when the data is going to be coming back to the various subteams. If we're going to reconvene as a subteam, I'm not sure we can commit to reconvening at this time because the full working group may be going forward as data comes in. So I just wanted to give that heads up that if we do want to get back together, we may need to find another time. And hopefully people are somewhat amenable to that, and sorry that we might have to do that. Thanks.
Okay. Then I believe that we've covered everything we need to cover for now. Beth, if you have all the points you need from us to proceed.
Yes, I do. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So in about an hour or so or less, you will see to just this group on this phone, on this meeting, the amended survey in red line and clean, and the notes from today's call.
Okay. Well, thank you, staff. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I appreciate, again, everyone's work that's been put into getting this to final form. Appreciate everybody's time. That concludes the call.
And thank you, Jason.
And thank you so much, Jason, for chairing, and thank you, everyone, for all your work, and have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.